If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Welcome, welcome to CBS Mornings on this Thursday. I'm Gail King.
I'm Tony DeCoppo.
And I'm Nate Burleson.
We're going to begin with a major setback for Democrats on Capitol Hill. What would have been their landmark voting rights bill failed 52-48 in the Senate last night, with two Democrats joining all 50 Republicans in opposing a rules change to push it through. The vote came after hours of passionate speeches from both sides of the aisle. And in a statement, President Biden reacted, saying, quote, he is profoundly disappointed that the United States Senate has failed to stand up for our democracy, close quote. Scott McFarlane was inside the chamber, and he joins us now. Scott, this is a stinging defeat for Democrats. Good morning.
Hey, Tony, good morning. Supporters said this voting rights law would have made it easier to vote and stop suppression at the ballot box. Critics said it was a power grab to rewrite the rule books. But in the end, it was Senate Democrats here at the Capitol who couldn't wrangle enough votes to make it law.
On this vote, the yeas are 52, the nays are 48.
President Biden's landmark voting legislation failed in the Senate late Wednesday night.
This is a moral moment in America.
After nearly 12 hours of heated debate over changing filibuster rules to get the bill through,
they would shatter the soul of the Senate for short-term power.
This is an unprecedented, coordinated attack to make voting harder for eligible citizens.
Facing a wall of unanimous Republican opposition, Democrats were dealt back-to-back losses without being able to change Senate procedures, eliminate the filibuster, and pass sweeping voting rights law. One of the holdouts, West Virginia's Joe Manchin.
Eliminating the filibuster would be the easy way out. It wasn't meant to be easy.
The proposed voting legislation would have allowed for early voting and no excuse mail-in voting nationwide, and it would have made Election Day a federal holiday. Two of the Senate's three black members clashed over accusations that any opposition was an attempt to deny minorities the vote.
I felt frustration and irritation rising in my soul as I keep hearing the references to Jim Crow. I asked myself how many Americans understand what Jim Crow was.
Don't lecture me about Jim Crow. I know this is not 1965. That's what makes me so outraged. It's 2022. And they're blatantly removing more polling places from the counties where black and Latinos are overrepresented.
Members of the Congressional Black Caucus took a last-minute stand outside the Senate, but walked away knowing the voting rights law was set to fail.
Joe Manchin, that pivotal senator from West Virginia, said yesterday he's open to changing the Electoral College Count Act, the law by which Congress counts the electoral votes after a presidential election. That was the process interrupted by the Capitol attack January 6th. But the outlook for that is cloudy. Democrats have been emphatic. They want much bigger change. Gail?
All right, cloudy. Normally never a good thing. Thank you very much, Scott. Now, the vote came just hours after a marathon news conference by President Biden to mark 1 year since his inauguration. He took questions for nearly 2 hours. Ed O'Keefe is at the White House with more on the story. Ed, was one of the longest news conferences people have seen. Clearly, he had a lot to say. Good morning.
He sure did, Gail. Good morning. He took dozens of questions on issues ranging from the pandemic to the future of his legislative agenda. But on that issue of voting rights, he became the second consecutive American president to raise concerns about future election results. During his news conference, President Biden was asked if he believes this year's elections will be fairly conducted and the results legitimate, given that his voting reform bill didn't pass.
Well, it all depends on whether or not we're able to make the case to the American people that some of this is being set up to try to alter the outcome of the election. I think you're going to see the people we're trying to keep from being able to show up, showing up and making a sacrifice.
The president also touted accomplishments.
We've seen record job creation, record economic growth in the past year.
And admitted setbacks.
Should we have done more testing earlier? Yes. But we're doing more now.
The president is facing sagging polling numbers and doubts about his handling of the pandemic and inflation. On the pandemic, he asked for patience.
Some people may call what's happening now the new normal. I call it a job not yet finished. It will get better.
And addressed concerns about COVID school closures.
We're not going back to closing schools. Schools should stay open.
Since Congress failed to pass his sweeping Build Back Better plan, Biden now says break it up.
I'm confident we can get pieces, big chunks of the Build Back Better law signed into law.
With Russian troops amassing on the Ukraine border, the president made a prediction about Vladimir Putin's next steps.
My guess is he will move in. He has to do something.
As for a potential American response,
it's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having to fight about what to do and not do, etc. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing with the force amassed on the border, it is going to be a disaster for Russia.
The president's suggestion that a minor incursion might be acceptable earned strong criticism and concern from Republicans. The White House later clarified any invasion will be met with a swift, severe, and united response from the U.S. and allies.
This is the most consequential thing that's happened in the world in terms of war and peace since World War II.
In the news conference, the president said he believes even Vladimir Putin doesn't know quite yet what he's going to do about Ukraine, and he repeatedly declined to specify what kinds of economic sanctions the United States and allies might potentially use against Russia. Nate?
Vice President Kamala Harris, who we will speak with later in the show, she spoke about Russia and the Ukraine. Ed, thank you so much. As for right now, let's go to Christina Ruffini, who is in Geneva following the U.S. efforts to prevent Russia from invading Ukraine. Christina, good morning.
Good morning. It's a chilly afternoon here in Geneva, and there's no reason to expect tomorrow's talks between the U.S. and Russia are going to be all that much warmer. Responding to President Biden's comments that Russia faces severe consequences if it invades Ukraine, the Kremlin said this morning those words could further escalate the situation. Russia shows no sign of backing down, increasing troop numbers on its border with Ukraine and staging active military drills in Belarus. Overnight, CBS News confirmed the U.S. has given permission for NATO allies to rush additional American-made weapons to Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Germany today meeting with European leaders, trying to get everyone on the same page about sanctions. Then he will come here to Geneva, where even though tensions are high, he's already trying to set the bar low, saying not to expect any major breakthrough. Tony?
Christina Ruffini for us in Geneva. Christina, thank you very much. We have new information on a high-stakes mystery we've been covering for years now. The CIA says that most cases of the neurological illness known as Havana Syndrome, remember that, were not caused by a foreign adversary. Senior investigative correspondent Catherine Herridge has the latest on all this. Catherine, I think this was surprising news for a lot of people. Good morning.
Tony, it was for many. Good morning. The CIA has released new interim findings overnight on hundreds of reported cases of Havana syndrome, ultimately ruling out Russia, Cuba, or any other foreign group as the cause of most of these illnesses. Instead, the majority of reports can be reasonably explained by medical conditions or environmental and technical factors, including previously undiagnosed illnesses. After a cluster of cases was first reported in Cuba, U.S. diplomats and personnel stationed overseas said they experienced Havana syndrome symptoms, including in China, Austria, and Vietnam. Some told CBS News they heard ringing or loud piercing sounds and felt intense pressure in the face with pain, nausea, and dizziness. A recent study conducted for the State Department found the most plausible cause was directed pulsed radio frequency energy. The CIA said about two dozen priority cases remain unexplained, and the focus of active investigation, Russian and Cuban officials have consistently denied involvement, Gail.
All right, Catherine, thank you very much. The U.S. Supreme Court has dealt a major blow to former President Trump. The justices say that presidential documents linked to the assault on the Capitol can be turned over to the House committee investigating this attack. Among the documents are handwritten notes about January 6th from former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. The committee wants to know what the president was doing before and during the violence. Only Justice Clarence Thomas opposed releasing the documents.
Now to the latest on the pandemic and the massive surge of the Omicron variant. The CDC reports that an average of about 1 in 4 COVID tests is coming back positive. And that is a huge increase. All 50 states are reporting a high level of community transmission. Missouri has one of the lowest vaccination rates in the country, and the COVID situation is dire. Carter Evans is in Kansas City, which is averaging more than 3,400 new cases every day. And hospitals are swamped with patients.
Good morning, Pam. I'm going to open your eyes.
At St. Luke's Hospital, Hi. Dr. Andrew Schlachter and his colleagues are treating COVID patients everywhere they can.
You're in our neurosciences ICU.
If you have someone who comes in with a neurological issue right now and you don't have any beds, where do they go?
Right now, we try and take care of patients in any variety of places that we can.
Just since December, the number of infected patients here nearly tripled. Out of 286 COVID patients at this hospital, only 15 are vaccinated.
Are you coughing?
A little.
Pamela Maples avoided the vaccine because she thought it was more dangerous than COVID.
Were you concerned about COVID before?
When she tested positive last month, she was in the hospital 8 days later.
I had no clue it would be like this.
What did you think it might be?
Oh, like it's a flu. It's a regular old flu. And that's what everybody kept telling me.
It's a story nurse Kristen Sollers hears too often.
There's a lot of anger about the community not wanting to take care of themselves and asking for us to pick up that slack when they become critically ill. And other days, it's really profound sadness because we have the saddest stories you've ever heard in your life.
And after weeks in the hospital, Pamela Maples is now begging others to get the shot.
Take the vaccine. Very, very important.
Now, Pam's ex-husband was also in the hospital here being treated for COVID, but he died last week. And after everything this family has been through, Pam says there are still some close friends and family members that will not get the vaccine. Gail?
I don't know what more people need to see, but thank you very much, Carter. We have to just keep telling this story. Thanks a lot. Jury selection begins this morning in the federal trial of three fired Minneapolis police officers facing civil rights charges in the George Floyd case. Thomas Lane, J. Alexander King, and Tu Tao were all at the scene when Derek Chauvin killed Floyd by kneeling on his neck for more than 9 minutes, 9 minutes and 29 seconds. Chauvin was convicted of murder in a separate state trial last spring. Now, he has pleaded guilty to one of the federal charges. Mola Lange's at the federal courthouse in St. Paul, where the other three men will now go on trial.
We're back in session and on the record.
Unlike the trial last spring, where court cameras captured Derek Chauvin as prosecutors successfully made their case, this trial won't be broadcast. Former Minneapolis police officers Thomas Lane, J. Alexander King, and Tu Tao are charged with willfully depriving George Floyd of his civil rights. Attorney and legal analyst Joe Tamburino.
What is the defense's argument here?
The defense's argument is twofold. Number one, that they did not willfully try to violate the rights of Mr. Floyd. And secondly, that they had no part in what Mr. Chauvin was doing.
Video of the deadly 2020 encounter shows Lane, King, and Tao also at the scene as Chauvin kneels on Floyd's neck. Lane and King had been on the force for less than a week. At the heart of this case is whether or not the defendants could and should have tried to stop Chauvin.
In Minnesota, the only person that has to render any aid would be the Good Samaritan laws, but they don't apply to police officers.
I can't breathe!
I can't breathe!
In Minnesota, the troubled relationship between police and the community goes beyond the death of George Floyd. Just last month, former Brooklyn Center police officer Kim Potter was convicted of manslaughter in the shooting death of Dante Wright.
And now we have these three former officers. It's quite a unique confluence of all of these issues dealing with police officer and community relations.
Derek Chauvin,
could make an appearance at this trial. It is possible that he is called to testify by either the prosecution or the defense, but at this point it's unclear if either side will do that. If convicted, these three officers could face up to life in prison, Tony.
A lot of healing still needs to happen there in Minnesota, and the search for justice is part of it. Mola, thank you very much.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.